You are listening to Expanding Horizons, the podcast of the Unitarian Church of South Australia, a home of progressive spirituality and free religious thought and action since 1854. Views expressed in these podcasts are those of the speaker and are not intended to represent the position of the church itself or of the worldwide Unitarian Universalist movement. For more information, visit unitariansa.org.au.
Thinking about wisdom, a lot of us come into life with questions about how to live well, how to know right from wrong, how to be moral. I've never had a single dilemma like that because my grandmother used to sing this song to me in bed, and it's given me a great guideline for my life, and I hope it brings something for you too. Be courteous, kind and forgiving, be gentle and peaceful each day. Be warm and human and grateful, and have a good thing to say. Be thoughtful and trustful and childlike. Be witty and happy and wise. Be honest and love all your neighbors. Be obsequious, purple and clairvoyant. Be pompous, obese and eat cactus. Be dull and boring and omnipresent. Criticize things you don't know about. Be oblong and have your knees removed. Be tasteless, rude and offensive. Live in a swamp and be three-dimensional. Put a live chicken in your underpants. Get all excited and go to a yawning festival. Okay, everybody, be courteous, kind and forgiving. Be courteous, kind and forgiving. Be gentle and peaceful each day. Be gentle and peaceful each day. Be warm and human and grateful. Be warm and human and grateful. Have a good thing to say. Have a good thing to say. Be thoughtful and trustful and childlike. Be thoughtful and trustful and childlike. Be witty and happy and wise. Be witty and happy and wise. Be honest and love all your neighbors. Be honest and love all your neighbors. Be obsequious, purple and clairvoyant. Be obsequious, purple and clairvoyant. Be pompous, obese and eat cactus. Be pompous, obese, and eat cactus. Be dull and boring and omnipresent. Be dull and boring and omnipresent. Criticize things you don't know about. Criticize things you don't know about. Be oblong and have your knees removed. Be oblong and have your knees removed. Be tasteless, rude, and offensive. Be tasteless, rude, and offensive. Live in a swamp and be three-dimensional. Live in a swamp and be three-dimensional. Put a live chicken in your underpants. Put a live chicken in your underpants. Go live in a closet and suck eggs. Go live in a closet and suck eggs. Thank you.
I hold you personally responsible, Rob, for letting that lot loose on our congregation. In ancient Greek times, cynicism was a philosophical movement that promoted the notion that the purpose of life was to live in virtue in agreement with nature. So far, so good. But the cynics rejected wealth, power, sex, and fame. They ostentatiously rejected pleasures, possessions, and personal hygiene. This was not a recipe for success. The tradition declined and fell and rose and declined and fell several times between 5 BC and 5 AD, leaving more than a trace of asceticism on Christianity. Cynicism is, in modern times, an inclination to believe that people are motivated purely by self-interest and to disbelieve in the sincerity and goodness of human motives and actions. It is a source of inspiration to wits like Ambrose Pierce or H.J. Mencken. Here's a couple of examples from the Devil's Dictionary. Politics. A strife of interests masquerading as a contest of principles. Death is not the end. There remains litigation over the estate. And from Mencken, he marries best who puts it off until it's too late. And Puritanism, the haunting fear that someone, somewhere, may be happy. Apart from being a source of innocent merriment, cynicism is a major cause of depression, and hence a spiritual dilemma. Remember Marvin the Robot from The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy by Douglas Adams? I got very bored and depressed, so I went and plugged myself in, and I talked to the computer at great length about my view of the universe, said Marvin. What happened? Asked Ford. It committed suicide, said Marvin. Why should I want to make anything up? Life's bad enough as it is without wanting to invent any more of it. Laughs aside, with issues like fake news, the refugee crisis, terrorism, climate change denial, border protection, cynicism can begin to look like realism, and that is a worry. 2 million Australians are affected by anxiety each year. 65,000 to 70,000 a year attempt suicide. Although the experience of anxiety is intensely personal, its source is largely societal. Consumerism and nostalgia are two ways of distracting ourselves from our anxieties and insecurities. Retail therapy is effective, but only in the short term. Later on, what follows is financial distress, hoarding, ongoing disappointment with our purchases, and even FOMO, that's fear of missing out, if our materialism takes the form of greed for digital data. Nostalgia is just as ineffective beyond the short term. Our penchant for retro fashion and music is harmless, mostly, but it's not helpful in grappling with the present when people yearn for a pre-drug society, forgetting the horrors of the 6 o'clock swill, which resulted in widespread domestic violence and misery. It's not helpful when people yearn for the time you could leave your car unlocked. Crime rates across most categories have been coming down, even if nostalgia says otherwise. Nostalgia is just as likely to make you more unhappy as happy. Which brings me to the point I made in an address last year. The pursuit of happiness is not a suitable strategy for living. If you think you're entitled to personal happiness as a default position, your anxiety levels are primed to increase. You're not happy. What's wrong with you? So where are we now? We're in the middle of an anxiety epidemic, plus our other major seemingly intractable problem, the fragmentation of society due to growing income inequality, shrinking households, the rate of relationship breakdown, ever-increasing reliance on information technology, and above all, probably, the sheer busyness of our lives. We are in need of major course correction. In the words of Lao Tzu, if you do not change direction, you may end up where you're heading. And now it's time for the reading.
This interview was given during the last year of Leonard Bernstein's life. Everyone who was born after 1945, when that bomb went off, is a completely different kind of person from those who were born before then. Because they grew up in a world where the possibility of global destruction was an everyday possibility, to the point where they didn't even think about it that much. But it conditions the way they live. Anybody who grows up, as those of my generation did not, taking the possibility of the immediate destruction of the planet for granted, is going to gravitate all the more towards instant gratification. You push the TV button, you drop the acid, you snort the coke, you do the needle, and then you pass out in the bed. And you wake up so cynical, and guilt breeds fear and anxiety, and anxiety breeds fear, and it goes around. It's that old vicious circle where one thing reinforces the other, which drives you day and night to instant gratification. Anything of a serious nature isn't instant. You can't do the Sistine Chapel in 1 hour. And who has the time to listen to a Mahler symphony, for God's sake? You can't do the Sistine Chapel instantly. You have to lie on your back and look up at that ceiling and contemplate. And we've already lost a whole generation of kids who are blind to anything constructive or beautiful, who are blind to love, 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 that battered, old, dirty four-letter word that few people understand anymore. We must get back to faith and hope and belief, things we're all born with. But unfortunately, we're also born thinking we're the center of the universe. And of all traumas, that one is the biggest and most difficult to get rid of. And the hardest principle to absorb is the Copernican one, that you're just another speck on this planet, which is a speck in the solar system, which is a speck in the galaxy, which is a speck in the universe, which is a speck in something even bigger that we don't have the minds to contemplate. We destroy our children's songs of existence by giving them inhibitions, teaching them to be cynical, manipulative, and all the rest of it. You become hardened, but you can find that playfulness again. We've got to find a way to get music and kids together, as well as to teach teachers how to discover their own love of learning. Then the infectious process begins. Being with young people has kept me alive, I tell you, and I would do anything for them. Think of what we can do with all that energy and all that spirit instead of eroding and degrading our planet on which we live and disgracing ourselves as a race. I will spend my dying breath and my last blood and erg of energy to try to correct this impossible situation. There is so much inherent goodness in people that if they aren't inhibited by traumas and given half a chance, it shines through.
Hugh Mackay asks, how do we get to where we are now? How did we get here? After 26 years of continuous economic growth, we're in debt. Quibbling over the entitlements of welfare recipients, shutting new home buyers out of the market, and weighing tertiary students down in debt. We've managed to degrade our public schools to the point that overall education standards have slid down the international rankings, and we haven't made much progress toward genuine gender identity. Mackay identifies rampant individualism, materialism, and social fragmentation as the chief causes of the problem. But he expresses confidence in our ability to combine tough minds and tender hearts. His inspiration is derived from the many communities which are showing us how to become more generous, compassionate, cohesive, and harmonious. His latest book is called Australia Reimagined, and it's subtitled Toward a More Compassionate, Less Anxious Society. The introduction is headed Compassion Changes Everything, and the first chapter, We Need More Courage Than Luck. The key seems to be in recognizing the value of a cohesive society. When we are socially fragmented, we're more anxious. We are herd animals by nature. If cut off from the herd, we become anxious and self-absorbed, which inhibits social interaction. It's a vicious cycle. Think about this. When did gazing into a mirror or doing a personality quiz ever affirm your identity. You do far better gazing into the faces of your loved ones, children, friends, workmates, or even the acquaintances who put up with you as part of a network, a sort of metaphorical fourth hand at bridge. Bev Berry's reading shows how Leonard Bernstein, a New Yorker, a man deeply embedded in an extremely competitive and individualistic society, affirmed his commitment to faith, hope, and belief. He didn't rabbit on about gangs and violence in the street and how in my day you could leave the front door unlocked. He wrote West Side Story, which unlocks compassion and empathy. You are on side with the Jets and the Sharks as you watch it. You're not on side with Officer Krupke, Krupke, and some of the most beautiful songs are full of faith and hope. One hand, one heart, there's a place for us, there's a time for us, it's somewhere. Bernstein was into love and hope and faith, but not blind faith. Not for him the philosophy of Dr. Pangloss, that all is best in the best of all possible worlds. His hero, Candide, started off as a simple-minded optimist. Candide is, of course, Voltaire's Candide, and he works very hard on applying the teaching principle that all is for the best to the real world, and he's particularly good at it. For example, if Columbus, in an island of America, had not caught the disease, which poisons the source of generation and often indeed prevents generation, we should not have chocolate or cochineal. At the end of his bitingly satirical novella, Voltaire says, "Work keeps at bay three great evils, boredom, vice, and need. Let us work without theorizing. 'Tis the only way to make life endurable." It's amazingly apt, isn't it? The top four ways to combat negativity, depression, and cynicism all involve quite a bit of work and a few caveats. For example, the first way is faith. Well, of course, that faith has to be about grace and peace and love, not the sort of religious faith that's heavily into sin, judgment, and punishment. Faith generally involves working on your virtues, working on your spiritual values, as well as working for charities and social justice. Faith for atheists is often about causes, clean energy, environmental improvement, world peace. The emotional and spiritual benefits of working for a cause may be somewhat diminished, and here comes the caveat, if your focus is entirely negative. Anti-capitalism, anti-Islam, anti-sugar, anti-red meat. Causes, though, can bring both religious and secular people together, which brings me to the second major way to counteract gloom, and it's community. A sporting club, a choir, a community garden, a church. All these counteract loneliness, inspire one to improve performance, improve self-regulation, cooperation, conforming to group norms. There's the caveat, not Hell's Angels, all right? It's absolutely necessary, really, not to get drowned in the negativity of press. We really have to do something about the fragmentation of our society. And I hope that this service has at least inspired you to grab Hugh Mackay's book. I haven't even touched on the fault lines that fragment our society. Gender wars, religion, I did touch on that. Politics, is this the best we can do? And choice. But what the book absolutely convinced me of is the way that compassion and anxiety are flip sides of a coin. They're very, very closely related. And when you up anxiety, you decrease compassion. And when you increase compassion, you increase cohesion. The words for the benediction come from Hugh Mackay. The clock on species survival is ticking. It's time to look beyond each other's particular belief systems and to search for the signs of our common humanity. It's also time to back off struggles over the value of religion per se and to acknowledge the equal value to our society of those whose religion encourages a commitment to compassion and those who get to that destination via a different path.
Well, we hope you enjoyed this Expanding Horizons podcast. These podcasts are the intellectual property of the presenter. They can be used only with the express permission and appropriate acknowledgement of the presenter and the podcast used in its entirety. This permission can be obtained by emailing unitarianessay@bigpond.com. Please feel free to leave a comment or visit us on Facebook or Twitter by searching Essay Unitarians.